way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd.
And we are live. Good Monday morning, folks. And today we're going to be talking about AI, but in a way we've never done so before. We're not really going to talk about how to use it today. Nope. We're not going to really talk about how it displaces jobs today. In fact, we're going to do the exact opposite. We're going to talk about how, well, you've been lied to, period, again, period, by the same people, period. What do I mean by this? I mean that we have all been told AI is coming for your jobs. AI is coming for your jobs. I've even said that, and I still think to a large degree it's true. But something else is coming for a lot of jobs. That thing is reality, and the reality of something I'm going to refer to today is adult daycare. In other words, there's a lot of jobs people really don't need to be doing. If you didn't show up, if you have one of these jobs and you didn't show up for like 3 months, and then you came back to work, you could drop right back into your job, and no one would really care that you weren't there. Maybe the person that hangs out with you at the coffee maker or something like that. But in the end, nothing you do, you know, when the Bobs say, "What is it that you would say that you do here?" You really wouldn't have a good answer. You might do a lot of stuff. You might not be a bad person, but the output may not be necessary. You might also only actually work like 2 hours a day of real work, and what you do is still not that important. I know some of you might be getting mad at me right now. Like, I work my ass off, Jack, you know, especially if like you have a manual trades job or something like that, and then I'm probably not talking about you. But I'm telling you that there are a lot of people. Okay, there are a lot of people in this world who have jobs that are unnecessary. And what if I told you that a lot of these layoffs that we're having, and I don't mean like 10 people here and 5 people there, I mean like between September and January last year, well, September last year to January this year, Amazon reduced headcount by 30,000 people. They said it was AI. And then later, they admitted it really wasn't. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about today. And I'm going to come at you with something that you might find interesting. Number one, unlike a lot of things I uncover, I'm not the first one to say this. It's all over the place as soon as you know to look for it. And two, the way I got onto it was an email newsletter from Jeff Woods, who is the author of The AI-Driven Leader. And he was talking all about it without saying it. He was actually making a completely different point. And when I was reading and looking at his newsletter, I'm like, oh, they're doing it again. They're doing it again. Maybe it's because when they do it, they never have any consequences. As Charlie Munger once said, never question anything until you look at the incentives underneath the hood. So that's what we're going to do today. Why are people being laid off by the tens of thousands? How's it actually working? How does AI get the blame for it? What role, if any, does AI play in it? What role will AI play in the future of the workplace? We'll be talking about all of that today. And if you don't think it's a survival topic, I hope you're independently wealthy, because most of us actually have to work for a living. We have to do things to get money. And most of us are not. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. I have my business. And if it goes down, I can move into other, you know, areas, and I can take other opportunities to earn income. Most people have a job. You either get paid or you don't. You get fired or you keep your job. That's the reality. So what we're talking about today is as visceral of a survival topic in modern life as it gets. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor day number one today can help you survive the modern reality of big tech, and that is Above Phone. You can find them at abovephone.com, where they make some of the best privacy-focused phones, tablets, and laptops available on the market today. It will shut down the ability from your device manufacturer, your app manufacturer, and your ISP largely to spy on you, to collect your data and sell your data to other people. It's also just a better way to do things. And if you check them out today and you look at the stuff and go, man, I'm kind of interested in this stuff, but I don't know if like I can, like, this seems all Jason Bourne or something like that. I don't know if I can do it. It's not hard. If you can use a phone or a computer now, you can use an Above Phone or Above Book. plain and simple. There might be a few things that are just a little tiny bit different. It'll take a week to adapt to it, and you won't even notice the difference. I now slip seamlessly between an above book, a MacBook, and a PC. Like, there's just some little different things that go on here and there, but overall, it's the same functionality. And so if you don't think you can do it, don't worry, you can. Plus, they'll give you an above advisor who will walk you into onboarding onto your new device. And if you're a MSB member, you can get $75 off any phone at abovephone.com. Next up today, let's talk about the Case Place, the newest member of the lineup of Survival Podcast sponsors. I was super excited when the owner of the Case Place reached out to me. I don't get real excited about new sponsors or sponsorship inquiries or anything like that from a lot of people. When I saw what this guy was doing, I knew he was someone that I wanted to bring you. And I want to say something for people that maybe are a little bit newer to the show. When I bring on a sponsor, I am trying to do two things. Yes, I don't hate money, so I want some money from the sponsor. However, the money a sponsor pays me is a very small amount of money compared to what the show is today. I could ask for more. I don't ask for more. I want to work with small entrepreneurs. I want to work with people that really care, and I want to bring an additional service to my community. That's what this does. The Case Place, you will be able to get your hands on top-level gear. We're talking military-grade storage cases, Pelican, Hardig, SKB, and more at 50 to 80% off retail price. The best gear at the best price. Some of this gear sells for far less than the cheapest knockoff like Chi-Com crap off of Amazon. You know, you could get the top tier product for the bottom tier price. And MSB, I even negotiated a deal for you guys on top of all this. You get an additional 10% off all your purchases at thecaseplace.com. With that, I want to dig into this. I'm going to tell you right now today, if you're the kind of person that tends to do audio only, you should come check us out on a live stream. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot of fun. We've got a lot of people talking to each other in the live stream feed and stuff like that. Mondays usually start out a little bit slow, and then I just watch the headcount just climb over time. We usually end up with a few hundred people just on the live stream alone, talking to each other, talking to me. That's great, but you won't miss anything today. I am not relying on graphics, PowerPoint decks, news stories. I will mention some, but I'm not bringing them up. This is a straight up opportunity to just listen and not really miss much like some days. But recently this hit me because I try to stay plugged into the AI space as much as possible. And I give tremendous credit to Jeff Woods, who wrote the AI Driven Leader. I recommend his book on my site, his method called CRIT, which is context, role, interview, task, is going to play a big part in my new book due out this fall, Me, Myself, and AI. Great guy, and I subscribe to his newsletter. And I got a newsletter from him, and it was pretty interesting. And I'm going to read to you what the 20% executive summary is, and see if you don't immediately jump right to where I did, though that's not the angle that this newsletter is about. I don't think he's in denial of it. I don't think he doesn't see it. I think that he's going a different way with, well, here's where you end up on the other side of it. But here's what it says. Enterprises don't have a model problem. They have an operating problem. ServiceNow, IBM, and CNN all converged at the same point this week. Reuters 2006 survey says 60% of companies plan to lay off employees who don't adopt AI. 60% of companies said if our employees refuse to adopt AI, we will fire them. That's what that said, okay? Meanwhile, only 29% of organizations report meaningful AI ROI. So only 29% of organizations say AI has actually produced a meaningful return of our investment back to us. Okay. And 75% of executives admit that their AI strategy is, quote, more for show. The vendors are selling agents. The leaders I work with need an operating system. That's the gap. It is what defines the next 90 days. So basically what they're saying is, and if you read the whole newsletter, the idea is the executives are saying the day of advisory AI is over. It did what it can. We've done what we can with it, and we're ready to move on to active agents that actually come in and do the work and actually execute and follow all the way through and complete tasks from one end to the other without a human. And that is a big pile of bullshit. And the reason I think Jeff is pushing it is it would benefit him highly as a consultant in the space if companies were trying to build that. I'm not saying he's a bad guy for it. I'm saying that, and I think eventually we get there. And as a consultant, you need to be ahead of the power curve. So it's not Jeff's job to point out current bullshit, right? So don't take this as a slight at Jeff. It's Jeff's job to obtain clients and then prepare his clients for what comes next. But this is not the next 90 days problem. We have not even gotten close to what AI can do for the average company in kind of an advisory AI LLM model, where if you had employees who were actually actively using strong prompting and guidance in their daily activities to improve their own floor performance, which is what I'm writing a book about, there would be a difference of night and day in what could be accomplished. So that's bullshit in of itself. I'm not blaming Jeff for that, because the guys he's saying what the CEOs are saying. At the same time, by the way, he's telling you the CEOs are lying to you if you didn't get that. Did you get what I got out of that? As soon as I read that, that's the 20% executive summary on the whole newsletter. Like, that's the most important highlights of it. Then it goes through all the other stuff that I was kind of hitting on there. But I immediately said, oh, they're lying again. Their programs are performative. In fact, here's what recently had. I've got some links in the show notes if you want to look this up. Thousands of CEOs admit AI had no impact on employment. Thousands of CEOs. AI had no impact on our employment. The same people that laid people off like crazy and said it's because AI. 75% of executives admit their AI strategy is more for show than actual guidance. I'm going to tell you that I've got both of those linked for you. And then again, Amazon announced layoffs just a few days ago. 5 days ago, they announced more layoffs after they had already downsized by 30,000 jobs between September 2025 and January 2026. Are you starting to see a bigger picture here? It's very similar to the idea that raising the minimum wage would lead to kiosks everywhere. Remember when that was going on? Oh, yeah, you think you deserve $15 an hour for making a Whopper. Here's your replacement. All these memes and a little kiosk machine. And what did I say back then? The kiosks are coming everywhere. Nothing will stop them. It doesn't matter what minimum wage is. They're not putting the kiosk in to get rid of the employee, because the employee is going to go from making $12 an hour to $14 an hour. It's irrelevant. They're putting the kiosk in because you eliminate the headaches that come with a human. And it won't matter if minimum wage is lowered to $5. They're still going to put the fucking kiosk in. And there's a, you don't know. And the kiosk went everywhere where there were, the states individually or towns raised minimum wage. They put kiosks in. And the places where minimum wage is still the same as it's been for 20 years, there's kiosks there too. Why? Because the kiosk was always coming. The kiosk was going to happen. And we had a convergence of a political argument along with the rollout of the kiosk, which a lot of companies knew they would get pushback on, where they could say, see, it's because of this. It's the same pattern. AI is real. AI does some wonderful things. We're going to talk about that today. But it's also, isn't it a great excuse? Isn't it a great excuse? Just think about this, and then I'll kind of dig into it piece by piece. But if you are a CEO right now of a major, like Fortune 1000 company, right? You're talking about a public company with large networks of shareholders. And it's, you know, when you're in a company that size, it's not just the guy on the board that owns like 40% of the stock that has a say. When you have very large investors who have, let's say, 2% of your company, that may not seem like a lot, but their voice is heard. More, the mutual funds, et cetera, and the ETFs that buy your stock are massive individual shareholders alone, and their leverage is, we're going to remove you from our portfolio of growth and income stocks or tech sector stocks or whatever it is the ETF is, because your CEO is a moron. And this is when that would happen. Imagine you're that CEO and you come out at an earnings call or some sort of quarterly report or something, and you say, look, we're announcing layoffs today of another 12,000 people. And somebody pops up and says, why? And instead of saying, because we have made such tremendous leaps in efficiency thanks to AI, we no longer have need of those individuals. Instead of saying that, you said the truth. Well, see, we hired a whole shitload more people than we really needed. We grew our company in direct market response to other companies like us growing their company. We had unlimited free money for decades with cheap cheap interest loans. And so we overbuilt and we totally fucked up. And now that interest rates are coming up and now that we have to like serve all this capital expenditure and the debt leverage against it, we don't have enough fucking money. And we need to get rid of all the people we should have never hired in the first place. In fact, we need to probably get rid of even some people that we should have hired. It's easier to just wipe down to the base, figure out what's left, and we'll just hire back a little bit if we need to. What happens to that CEO? I mean, that's the truth. That's what should be said if there was any truth to anything going on. But what do you think would happen? I want to know from you guys in the comments here. What do you think would happen to a CEO that came out and said that? What do you think his future would look like in the next 30 days? Do you think he would A, be given a big bonus, B, told to go fuck off elsewhere, or C, get a free pony? Which one of those three things do you think is going to happen to that CEO? And who do you think is going to want him? I mean, you think about the people that fill these positions, and not just the CEOs, the whole C-suite, right? The COO, the CTO, the CFO, all of these people, right? They are all very high income earners. I mean, you can be, I was a COO when I worked with Neil, and I made really good money, but I didn't make the kind of money like a COO of a publicly traded firm would make. I mean, these guys make, life altering money. You're talking 600 grand a year minimum for positions like that, minimum, plus bonuses, structures, et cetera. Many of them are making millions of dollars a year. And I'm not just talking about CEOs here. I'm talking about, again, the whole C-suite, your executive level directors, all of that. If any of those people were to say the truth out loud in public, except in some very insulated cases, like the few people that are brave enough to speak out now because they are insulated, because they're telling the truth or whatever, they would get not just fired, they'd get run out of town on a rail, and they would have no hope of another position like that. Who's going to hire you? Why do you think Glasses Chick, progressive woke Glasses Chick at Cracker Barrel is clinging to her position so hard at Cracker Barrel? Cracker Barrel may tolerate her, totally different reasons that she needs to go than the AI thing. They may tolerate her and hold on to her because they made a commitment. They have a sunk cost fallacy. But I promise you, if that woman loses her job, no one's going to touch her going forward. No one. Maybe if enough years go by, if she can hold on for another year or two, then maybe she can lateral herself somewhere by making the move on her own. I guarantee she's got every recruiter on the planet out trying to find her a place to land right now to get the hell out of there. But she can't. That's what would happen to all these people. They would lose incredibly lucrative incomes. Sometimes massive amounts of stock options that are vested based on their performance, how long they're there. The next day, if they did this, they can't tell you the truth. They literally cannot do it. But the truth is simple. They overhired. They are doing an Elon Musk. More on that in a bit. So let's start off though. What can AI actually do right now? What is it actually doing inside companies? Now, I'm going to tell you right now, there are some unicorns. Situations. There are some companies that have directly adapted active agents that actually do things. There are companies that have put together kind of crack teams of AI specialists and said, now take this workflow. And like, there are companies doing that. They are not the average company, and all the data backs that up. All the off the record comments by CEOs, all the surveys that CEOs figure and C-suite executives fill out without actually having to put their name on their own paper and be held accountable for it, vet that out. Every single bit of it. So there are some of those unique cases. So if you're going to tell me, well, at my work, we're doing this and we have one engineer doing the work of five, I completely agree. Because one thing it can do is speed up workflows, but only when used correctly. That's the big thing. Only when used correctly, and correctly does not just about good prompt engineering. It's about good guidance, good pushback, and catching it early when there's a problem. Because what they're finding out now is that when that's not done properly, and AI does copywriting, or AI does some sort of code programming, or develops some sort of spreadsheet or whatever, it will often take the human longer to correct what AI did wrong than if the human had just done it themselves. Now, part of that is, how well is it being prompted, et cetera. But they're not companies are not investing in this. They're not here's your company approved, slightly neutered version of ChatGPT or Gemini or whatever. Go. Or in some cases, they're literally saying, don't put any proprietary information to it, but here's a subscription to, you know, your AI of choice or Gemini or whatever. But they're not being taught how to properly use AI, where to use AI, how to deploy AI, how to integrate it in their workflow. They're just basically being told, become an adopter. Read this newsletter. Read this compliance manual Karen in HR wrote with ChatGPT, whatever it is. So even though it can speed up workflows, it is not really being used correctly. Then very few people today are using it for one of its ultimate superpowers, and that is pressure testing ideas. Creating AI entities on the fly with specific expertise that are designed to be critical, and taking your idea that you're supposed to take to your boss, and the way we save time there is not necessarily putting the idea together faster, though we can speed that up with AI too, but like when we go to our boss doesn't have to fix 8 things to make it work. Maybe he has to fix one and tweak another. So you might do something like create a board of directors or a tech committee, or depending on what you're doing, the right group of people or the right individual to act as a critic of what you've done, put it in front of them, work through it, create another entity that is designed to solve problems, and then take the critic's information, the work plan you put together, and bring it back over and have the problem solver suggest ways to solve the problem, then run it back through the critic. Do that, you know, iterate that 2 or 3 times, and then take that to your boss. That is freaking a phenomenal thing, and that's why these executives in Jeff's newsletter that say the day of advisory AI has come and gone and it's over, no, it hasn't. They don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Some of these assholes, I read some of this, some of these assholes are still doing, like, they're telling their employees, if you don't adopt AI, we're going to fire you. You're going to get fired anyway. There's a number and your name's on the list. You're fucking gone. It's just a convenient excuse. But these same assholes, when they're getting on an airplane to fly first class across the country, have their fucking executive assistants print their fucking email out so they can read it on a piece of paper and make notes on it, call their assistant and tell them how to respond to it. They can't even use fucking email, and they're firing their employees for not using freaking AI. So you can't believe anything coming out of freaking corporate America right now about AI. At all, okay? So we're not pressure testing ideas. And the other thing is, it also aids with high-level thinking. And that's coming to the solution in the first place. That's spinning up agents that work for you like this. This is my directive. These are the things that I have available right now. These are my constraints. Help me design a plan to take to my boss. That would be one example. If you're actually running a division, how I have been given an objective to grow my division by 25% in revenue this year. I don't know how I'm going to do that, and then have that discussion. Those are things it does really well, which means there's a place for using AI from the entry-level person in the mailroom damn near all the way up to most senior executive, but very little of it is being actually utilized that way in most places. And those things right now do not really replace jobs at the level you see the layoffs happening. They can definitely reduce headcount. They can definitely lean out efficiencies, and they can definitely show you the people that are there for adult daycare, right? They are a mirror and a magnifier that exposes reality. And so they can have some indirect effect on layoffs right now, or they can even cause a few layoffs relative to the whole total, but they cannot be responsible because the companies that are doing the layoffs can't report a positive AI, ROI on their AI infrastructure investment. You see what I'm saying? Like, these two things just don't fit. They're telling you that they put the square peg through the round hole, and the square is like a 2-foot by 2-foot square peg, and they're claiming they put it through a 2-inch diameter round hole. You know that doesn't work. You don't even have to examine it. You just look at the two things and go, these don't go together. This doesn't work. This is a lie. That's what you're dealing with right now. So what does it take to effectively use AI right now to actually get these things done? One is strong prompting. And that's probably the one where the most work has been done at educating people. And not necessarily by the companies, by the YouTube level influencers, by all the people that talk about AI, the people that are the content creators, not just using AI, but creating content for AI users. Prompt engineering has become the most concrete focused thing, and it is important. The problem is that people have come to the belief that if I just use better prompting, I'll get better results. And this has a very big problem. It is a lie emboldened by truth. It is absolutely true. If you learn to write better prompts, you will almost magically and instantly get better results, but those results cannot scale. In other words, you can get a better prompt to do this one thing, and if it's something you do over and over again, it seems like somebody just threw you a Hail Mary and you caught four of them at the same time or something. It's just great. But as soon as you try to do the next thing that's not exactly the same, you have to completely re-engineer a new prompt. And you have to understand when it's drifting. You have to understand when you've gone too long. You've exceeded it. So what also is needed is the ability to push back on AI and the ability to recognize when it's drifting and reset. And then another thing that's really missing from a lot of people that are trying to use it is niche experience. And what I mean by that is it would be completely reasonable for me to take AI, if I was expanding TSP, if I was going to hire 20 people, and I was going to rent an office space at an office building down in Fort Worth, and I was going to put in a network, put a little server closet in, and run, you know, two data cables to every workstation. For me to sit down with AI and do up an RFP, request for proposal, and send it out to four or five data infrastructure cabling companies and take bids. And I could do that. And I could probably put that together in 15 minutes. And with my background, I could write it from scratch. It would probably take me 4 hours for something that size. So I go from 4 hours to 15 minutes, and I can do that. But because I can write it myself, there's this idea that people can use AI to effectively do something they couldn't do without AI. No. It's not even necessarily could they do it. Do they know what success looks like? Because there's like, can I build a PowerPoint presentation? Absolutely. Can I build one the way that Notebook LM does if I write everything I want in the presentation in just a simple document, upload that document, throw in one prompt, and say, give me a PowerPoint deck? No, I can't. I can make one that is just as effective at selling or teaching. But I can't make it with all the graphics and everything and the interest that it does. And no graphic artist could at the speed that it does it, right? Unless it was using it as its graphic generation tool. So I can't make that, but I know what a good presentation looks like. I know when I spin out a PowerPoint deck out of Notebook LM and I look at it, I can stand in front of a room and present that right now. And I know that's dog shit, or that one slide needs to move to the front, right? So I know what success looks like as a presenter, so I can develop a presentation with it. I also know what I want to present, and I can articulate it well in a document that actually creates the result. If I give you that same exact tool and tell you to make a presentation on insert subject here, and you don't know anything about that subject, you are dead in the fucking water, and whatever you come up with will probably be a big pile of nonsense and hallucinations thrown in. Because you'll just say, hey, make me a thing that does these things and spit out a document. And then you'll take the document over to Notebook LM and say, now make me a PowerPoint presentation. So the big thing that's missing from a lot of the effect that you're trying to get out of AI is the person has to be skilled to the level that they could do the work without the AI, or at least they could direct the work in others with the skill to do it and know what success looks like at the end. In other words, you have to know what winning looks like for this to work. And that is severely lacking right now. It's less Jeff's talk about they need infrastructure. They need to build a better operating system so that we can plug in some AI agent that's going to go in and automate, you know, refunds. That's one of the cases that they're saying. Anyway, we want an agent that just knows how to give refunds. Yeah, watch it go give refunds to a bunch of fucking people that didn't ask because I had a hallucination one night. And now how are you going to get the money back? You think people are going to give it back to you after that? That's just one example of what could go catastrophically wrong with these agents. We're not there yet, and we're not going to be there for another couple years, at least. Advisory has a long way to go, but we have to have experience, the ability to push back, and we have to have task silo discipline. And this is the biggest hole I see in what people are doing with AI today, and I'm talking about your average everyday user. And what I mean by that is people are having a discussion with AI, and they talk about an email they need to write to somebody, and they just stay in that chat window, and then they talk about something they're preparing for their boss, and then they ask about finding a restaurant for lunch, and like all those things are fine. They don't belong in one chat. What ends up happening is the large language model begins optimizing for continuity instead of clarity. And so that's another huge problem, and companies are not doing anything to educate the people in their system that they're mandating use these tools on how to do any of this. And I could keep going on that, but I think that's enough to make my point. AI cannot yet be trusted enough to take action without human approval. No matter how good the bot is, the active agent is, whatever, if a company is running one right now, there's still a final yes, right? Remember the episode of The Simpsons with the bird? Remember the birds, the dipper birds? You put them on a glass of water, like from the 30s or something, they invented this thing. I had one as a kid, though, even though I'm not that old, right? You take this little bird, and you wet his beak, and he's on like this little thing, and you put him in the glass of water. He's like a perpetual motion machine. He's like drinks water, comes up, drinks that one. Well, Homer got one of those birds, and he was working from home, and all he had to do was like three questions would come up. The answer was always yes. Vent excess heat, no. And the computer's like, warning, failure to, event excess heat will cause a catastrophic nuclear disaster. Oh, yeah. He realizes I don't have to type in yes or no. I can just do Y or N. So he sets the bird up to just keep hitting the Y button. And he comes home, and the bird's laying on his side, and the whole world's about to end because of what he did. That's kind of what AI feels like right now if you make it an active agent without a human deciding when to push that Y or that N button. And so we can't really trust it. And even where it is sort of trusted to do things, there's always a fail-safe built into the system, which means there's still always a human in control, which, by the way, is the solution to most of the problems we have right now anyway. Humans managing AI instead of AI managing humans. That is the way to approach this. We're just not taking the right approach to it yet. It cannot actually think without being walked through the process. I could get into why when AI says, thought for 18 seconds, that's nonsense, right? I hate the term we're using there because it's not thinking the way a human thinks. It may sort of feel that way, but it's not. It's raw computational power. It's got no empathy, no emotion. And in general, it's not looking at third, fourth, fifth, sixth order consequences. I know humans aren't either, but they're more than capable of doing it if they want to. You have to make an AI look at second, third, fourth order consequences. You have to specifically tell it to do so or it won't. And it doesn't look at those and then come back. When we do that, I want you to think about this. If I do A, the results are going to be B, and the results of B are going to be C, and that leads to D, then we have kind of this, if we're critical thinkers, which we should be if we're making decisions, when we get to D, if that's a really negative output, we kind of have this reset loop. Well, then how do we prevent that from happening? Is there a mitigation strategy that I can put after B? Or if I change a little bit about the way I do A, will that make D never happen? We think that way. AI doesn't. This is the thing that needs to be done so this thing can happen now this way, and it will look forward as far as it was prompted and only that far. So, again, we're back to a human operator has to be in control right now. Or you can't even get rudimentarily good results out of it. And it doesn't know things like, well, when do you make an exception? So it can replace, let's say, a CSR at the most basic level, right? I'm calling because I want a refund because my blue widget is the wrong shade of blue. And it can say, well, we have five widgets, blue, orange, green, brown, slate, and you pick the blue one, and that's the color blue is, and blue is blue, and we don't control what the monitor on your screen made you think blue meant, so you don't get a refund. It can do that if that's how you set the parameters for it. It can do, this customer's really, really mad, please hold on while a human comes to assist you. It can do that. What it can't do is analyze four different people with the exact same complaint, but have four different sets of circumstances and say, John deserves a refund, Bill can go fuck off, Stan can fuck off all the way back to wherever he came from, and Sally, we don't ever want Sally to, in fact, we need to ban her as a customer because she's just too much trouble. It can't do that. A human might make a mistake with those differentiations, but a human can do it. So you're back to this thing is supposed to replace all these people only actually being able to do the entry-level job. And all that does, if you have actually good people, is move them to the second level. All it does is let that one person handle more calls a day. That's what it does. It slows your wait time. It makes your customer more. But it doesn't lead to massive layoffs because it can't yet. It's not there yet. So what's actually going on? Like, how do we get here? What all led to this bullshit, right? Well, for the last about 15 years anyway, and it's really longer, but it's the last 15. You go back to basically the end of Bush and beginning of Obama in that time period forward, right? So when I say 15 years, that brings us up to the pandemic. That's what I'm talking about. Cheap money was the rule. Like money for a corporation from about, I'm going to say 2008-ish, but by 2010, 2012, all the way up until the scamdemic, like it was free to borrow money. That's the way companies looked at it. You may not look at it that way, but a company leveraging assets and income looked at it as it's free money. You know, you're borrowing money for 1% effectively. It's free money. Right. So you had unlimited capacity for growth. And so companies grew for the purpose of growing. And what that did is it led to the same effect that happens at a buffet and why we changed our rules for how we feed people at workshops. When we first started in workshops, we never did them before. We put out a ton of food and we let people come through. And the first couple guys in lines hogged down a bunch of food. This triggered a competitive reaction. Everybody did it. And the last few people ended up with very little to no food. And then we watched those same people that went through the line hogging up their plates, throw half their food in the garbage. And we went, no more. And we changed the dynamic. I know this doesn't seem like it relates, but it will in a second. What we do now, you come through, our staff serves you. As soon as the entire line has been fed, the food is wide open, go back and get anything you want. And we always end up with tons of leftovers, making the same amount of food per headcount. Because we removed that competitive, get it while you can mindset. This is what went on, especially in the tech sector and all these big name companies, including manufacturing firms, software service firms, all of them. Medical device manufacturers, drug makers, all of them did the same thing. Their competitor was in the news. They just hired 19,000 new employees and they're seeking 6,000 more. Well, hell, we got to do it too. We got all the money. We got to invest. So they did. They poured money in like fools. And they put in yoga class. Like, think of Twitter now, right? Think of Elon Musk got rid of 80% of the company. You can hate Elon all you want. I don't care. That doesn't matter to this. 80% of the company went away. The site does more than it ever did. They built features like Grok, et cetera, from the ground up with 20% of the original staff, and all the lights come on and the site still works. So those 80% of people were unnecessary. But what were they doing? They were getting chai lattes, and they were taking yoga classes, and they were walking around making these retard videos that we'll get to in a second. So COVID and unlimited money, in my opinion, delayed these layoffs. This was coming. When we had the COVID thing hit, we were at the cusp of a monetary reset from an interest rate standpoint. Rates were about to start going up the way they did a couple years later. The Fed was like, okay, we need to raise rates before inflation runs away. But then COVID hit, and we can't. oh my God, the economy's going to die. Everybody's going to die. We don't have any people are going to die. They're going to have to, you know, build morgue extensions on all the hospitals. We need 60,000 respirators just in New York City. Like, remember what it was really like. They suspended student loans. You notice if you look at a graph of delinquencies on student loans, they go to zero for like a 2-year period during a moratorium. They put moratoriums on rent. The entire economy grounded almost to a halt for no reason other than the government made it happen. And so the government also put pressure on the Fed. Do not do anything dumb with the money supply. And so the Fed did something dumb with the money supply. It just happened to be exactly what the government wanted because it was still dumb. They left interest rates lower than shit. And they tried to prop up an economy that never had a reason to slow down other than a false break anyway. Okay? So then, again, Elon Musk sets this pattern during this entire period. He buys a tech company, right? He gets rid of 80% of the workforce, and he improves performance. And at the same time, these I call them retard videos because they are. Because you're an idiot if you did a video like this. I guarantee you the people that did these videos are all fired now. A day in my life. And it was mostly girl boss types, you know, drinking freaking expensive fucking foo-foo coffees from the company cafe or whatever, and doing maybe 20 minutes to a couple hours worth of actual work a day. And even that work, when you really thought about what they were, we prepared reports for, you know, our whatever, like, you, and if you've ever been in a position where all this reporting comes in, you gloss over it. You don't need all of it. A lot of it's just for compliance purposes. A lot of that shit can be automated. And so the natural result was those people have to go, but there was a problem. There was a problem. What we were looking at is something that became known as adult daycare. People became cognizant of the fact that this is going on. People were flexing because they were bored during COVID, making these videos about how easy their life and job was and all the perks that came with it. And the guy that was like working at a gas station or something's like, what the fuck? I bust my ass every day. How do these people get away with this shit? You know, that guy he has a 401k and an investment program too. Okay. So all of this becomes evident and, you know, boards of directors start looking at this and going, hey, how much of this money are we spending on these people? But this all sort of comes to a head with a couple reasons they can't say the real truth out loud now. Again, the CEOs, the execs, the board directors, the board of directors, all of these people can't really say the truth because they're all going to get their heads cut off if they do. But there's a political piece to it too. Nobody in the modern, you know, industry, especially the tech space, wants to be associated with Elon Musk right now and being dark MAGA and a Trump supporter and all of that. I mean, they burnt down Tesla dealerships. Don't think that that didn't go noticed by some other people. So no one wants to be like, we're following the mandate that Elon Musk brought in when he took Twitter and turned it into X. We're trimming, like, they're not even going to say we fucked up and then just say, hey, we're laying people off because we're going to lean out efficient, make the business more efficient. Because that is political suicide, both with the government regulators, but also with the public at large. The public feels entitled to jobs, period. The average person feels their job's important, even if it isn't. In fact, when I sit here and talk like this, every head nods, But when you say, but it's you, no, it's not me, right? No one wants to believe that they're that person, even when they know inherently that they are. So they're now installing AI mandates while not using AI themselves, creating purely performative initiatives for AI in their company. You have to say you're doing AI right now. You know, BlackRock won't put you in their ETF for your sector if you don't say you're using AI. And when you say you're using AI, you have to point at something. You bought something from IBM or Microsoft or something like that. Do you have a solution? So they're spending money on something that they're not even really using while they're laying off people, claiming the thing is why they're laying off people. And it's a little bit true because the money that they're spending, right? The money that they're spending to buy the thing is more money that they don't have to deal with their CapEx problems that they created for themselves with all these years of debt. and hiring beyond their needs. It's the messed up world, isn't it? Like, isn't this actually much worse than AI is going to take your job? What if we can get rid of half of all workers before we even use AI? And AI is just a shield to do it. And then we start whittling down the half that still have jobs with AI when AI is actually ready to do some of these next level things. Or as people actually get training and experience and develop their skill sets using it so they really can do the work of five people and say, look, you got to pay me like I'm doing what I'm doing. And then when somebody says, well, what about Bill and Steve? Well, Bill and Steve have to go fuck off. Either they get as good as I am or you got to get rid of them because I'm doing their work now. So I don't see why you're keeping them because I can take my skill set, which is pretty in demand right now, and go somewhere else where someone that's smaller and more agile needs somebody like me. And that's a hard reality that they're going to run into. They did, however, spend millions, even billions on AI solutions and other tech that makes the economics worse. So while all this was going on, they so bought into the hype that AI would do the thing, they still had some cheap money left to spend, at least for a time, because this debt resets and it goes into new interest rates over time, right? So, like, we'll buy all this AI shit and it will solve the problem that we created. And it turns out, no, it won't. You have to solve the problem you created. AI will magnify what you have. See, this is the thing. AI for the individual is a mirror. You might want to write this down, what I'm about to say. AI for the individual is a mirror. Okay? AI is also a leverage tool. And for the company, it is specifically a leverage tool, which means it takes all the power the company has and magnifies wherever it's directed. So if you magnify something that's flawed, you get a faster fail rate. That's what you're looking at. Now, that applies to the individual too. But the individual will mostly see AI as a mirror and a leverage tool, where the company will more see AI purely as a leverage tool. Because that's what companies do. Companies use assets to apply leverage and do more than the asset could do without the leverage. And you, my friend, who have a job, are considered an asset. Human resources. Right in the name of the fucking department. You are an asset, and not necessarily in a good way. You're an asset like a truck or a building, right? They don't value you yourself as an individual. They value the thing that you can do, which is fine, but just understand that that's what it is. And while AI does speed up work and leverage, new small companies are moving much faster than the Fortune 500. You have companies right now with 20 people in them that are churning out the workload of 100 to 2 to 300 person operation. That's where the actual gains are being made, because there's something different about being a small agile company or a startup company and being a behemoth. When you're new and agile and small and young, you have nothing to lose because you've gained nothing yet. If your company was founded 2 years ago, you're nothing. Even if you were doing okay and you've got some money coming in, it's still nothing, right? When you are a company of 10,000 or more people, you're publicly traded, you're on grandma's freaking retirement account, you have massive customer bases. There is so much at risk to lose what you already have that you have to be more conservative. And I don't mean it in a political term at all. I just mean you have to be more careful. And careful eventually always becomes, due to the iron law of bureaucracy from Jerry Pournelle, right? It always becomes eventually crippling. It becomes so in the way that innovation literally that should take a month takes a year, and what should take a year takes half a decade. Tell me I'm wrong. Anybody that's worked for a big company, especially at a level where you can at least see the operation flow, like you can see the flow below you and above you, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me that's not exactly what happens. So these big companies now are shitting the brick. The real danger from the AI innovations is not, you know, giant capital X corporation XYZ PDQ laying off a ton of workers because of AI. It's five small agile competitors to Megacorp that chip away at their business, because with a small agile team, they can replace 1,000 people in that giant company with 50 in their own. But Jack, you just said they were doing the work, you know, like a, they had like, you know, 20 people doing the work at 200. That you just broadened the math because the small agile company does not have people that hold desks down for a living. They don't have people that don't really need to be there. When you are small, I've run small to mid-sized companies. When you're small like that, you identify a weak player quick and you get rid of them because you cannot afford them. And since the organization's small enough, you know who they are. And everybody the fuck else in that office knows who they are. And if you don't get rid of them, they're like a cancer cell. Your best people will leave because if you're in a team, like say your whole company's 20, but you're on a team of five and one person sucks and drags the other four down, that's 20% of your workforce on that team. And you'll know who that person is. You won't even have to ask. All you have to do is just stand just outside the break room and listen. That's it. That's all you'll have to do. Your team will tell you who the weakest link is, and you will get rid of them. So those types of teams that move that way, they are a tremendous threat to megacorporation XYZ. That's the real and that's why they're doing this as fast as they can, but they're still executing it poorly because they know the real threat is from the outside, not from the inside. Giant companies are just doing layoffs right now based on economic reality. It's one they cannot admit to, so AI made us is a better excuse. It's just not a reason. Now, I'm going to tell you, there are places where, yes, I'm going to say it again. I know I said it at the beginning. I want to say it again here, so I don't sound like I'm just poo-pooing it completely. There are places where AI has made such a difference that real layoffs have been made. They are just far less common than you've been led to believe. There are companies who have specifically built like AI-enabled groups or divisions or task forces, and those people are killing it. But nobody's seemed to figure out how to roll it out company-wide, you know, even in a modest organization of a few hundred to a few thousand people. Lots of people tell me, yeah, we use AI at work, but when I ask them what they're doing, it's very surface-level TaskRabbit shit. And all it's doing is speeding their workflow up. And to tell you the truth, what most people are doing with it is finding more ways to fuck off with the time that they buy back. The only people I know that are really getting more done are highly incentivized in their compensation to be productive. They're salespeople or they're engineers that have project deadlines that their bonus is tied to the project doing what it's supposed to and executing well and beating a certain date. It's people like that. When I talk to people like that, they're using AI to be more productive. I say, how many hours did you used to work? And they're like, you know, 70 to 80 a week. How many are you working now? 70 to 80 a week. So it's saving you time. Oh, tremendous time. What are you doing with that time? I'm making more money with it. Those are everybody else, basically. Yeah, I don't get this one. Where, what do you do with the time? I don't know. You know what I don't know means? It means you're fucking off. So that dynamic's playing out all over the place right now. So what does this all mean for you? Right? It's one thing to point at this and say, look, here's the problem. They told you AI was coming to take your jobs, right? Right from South Park. They took our jobs, right? And a lot of people have lost jobs. And a lot of people that lost jobs were told AI took your jobs. But AI didn't fire you. Wall Street did. And if you're a lower level company, you're not publicly traded. Maybe Wall Street didn't directly fire you, but they indirectly fired you because this pattern, if your company is big enough that it it participated in the slush fund of easy money for the last 15, 20 years, this applies to you. There's tons of companies that are overbuilt. Not all of them are public. That's just where it's the worst because you have this huge influx of capital that's mandated to use to grow your business. And no one can say you're not growing your business when you hire 7,000 people. Okay? See how simple that is? Like, you don't actually have to make more money right away. You just have to build the size of your organization initially out of the gate. So this has been repeated over and over and over again. But what do you do about it? Number one, you need to get good at using AI for what it's good at as it relates to what you do. You need to become a more experienced user of AI. And the number one way you can do that is simply by using it and learning to use it better. When you get bad results, try a different approach. Use the CRIT method that we've taught and talked about many times. Get Jeff Woods' book, The AI-Driven Leader, and become really good with the CRIT method. But it's only one piece to it. you need to be using it for your repetitive tasks. If you do something two or three times a day, or even three or four times a week, if you can make AI shorten the task timeline, do it. An example, every day when I do this podcast, I write my own show notes to this day. I very seldom have AI actually write my show notes. I write them. I know what I want to talk about. I take my show notes. I take a GPT that I built for myself. I take an example of a chat that went perfectly well. I put the last chat that went really well in and say, here's your context for this. I drop it in my new show notes and it says, I've read it. What would you like me to do next? And everything's preordained. And I say, shorten it into the format that I want for YouTube notes. But all I really say is go for YouTube notes, and it does it. Boom. And it makes my YouTube version of the text, which includes taking all my bullet points, folding them into paragraphs, reducing it by 25. It's a whole bunch of shit. It took me a long time to set it up and dial it in. But now I can go through my show notes. Just the paragraphs and the bullet points are ready. And I can go through, create my images, show title, SEO description tag, right? Blurb for TSPC Live, all the social media posts, the blurb that goes in the newsletter. Make the thumbnail, name the thumbnail, all of it. I can do all of the work that used to take me an hour and a half to 2 hours in 15 minutes. Why? Because I do it every day. So I built something for the thing I do every day, and I use it every day. And when it does one thing wrong, I go back into my AI tools and I figure out why it did that one thing wrong. I consult with a different AI and say, here's my existing code for my custom GPT. Here's what it's doing that I don't like. Let's examine this and rewrite the code. I reiterate the code, update the custom agent, and eventually the custom agent does exactly what I want, exactly the way that I want every time. Now, that's going to be a fundamentally required skill set in the future. You're going to need to be able to do that, or no company is going to hire you into any kind of knowledge work. Now, if you unclog toilets, there'll be an AI component to your job, but it won't be that strong. They won't be that strong. And there won't be Optimus robots going out unclogging toilets and digging up septic systems anytime soon. I don't care what anybody tells you. That's not coming anytime soon. But if you're in any kind of knowledge work, you're going to need to be able to do what I just said as it applies to your situation. If you are an entrepreneur, you better do it or you're going to get murdered by your competition. Because your competition is going to use it and they're going to outpace you in every way. They're going to do better quality work. The future is likely economic growth with rising unemployment at the same time. Economic growth meaning that company XYZ that sells blue, yellow, and green, and brown and slate widgets is going to say our sales are higher and our profitability is higher, but they are going to do it with less people. And part of that bigger problem is the giant gangrenous wound that we're seeing right now. And how many years have I said this? 30, 40% of people in general, your job is just not important. It isn't. It doesn't even matter to your company. I know you think it does, but it doesn't. If you work for a company of 5 employees, your job probably matters to your company a fucking lot. You're 20% of the workforce. If you work for a company with 10,000 employees, you are fucking replaceable as a shark's tooth. There's already one waiting for when you fall out to just pop back in next. And there's a lot of jobs that if they didn't replace it, I'm telling you, nothing would happen. Nothing. Go find some of these videos. They're not making them anymore because a lot of people got fired. But you can do a little bit of YouTube searching or do a little bit of just Googling. And you'll find these videos I'm talking about. These people walking around sucking on drinks, getting freaking quinoa salad at the company salad bar and shit. Sitting down and doing 5 minutes worth of work, gazing out a fucking window, standing on the fucking roof of the building doing yoga or some shit, right? Those people weren't necessary. That's why they're gone. There's a whole shitload of them left yet. So first you're going to cleanse that, and then the people left will have to compete in a new environment where they're going to be expected to do more. Because even those useless employees aren't completely useless. They do something. When I say that you don't need them, what I'm saying is there's probably a job that one person should do, and it's actually getting done by 4 to 5 without AI in the equation. Because each person has these things they're supposed to do, but the part they actually do that matters is this little piece. And when you put them all together, it gets done. So if they get rid of you, the company won't know, but the other four people in your five-person cluster might know, as they have to pick up that little bit of slack. But it ain't like any of them are actually being productive to their maximum level from a standpoint of what the company actually needs done. Needs done. And I saw this even in trades with aggressively selling overbuilt systems, for instance, where we would have these clients that would, like when I was in sales and I did it, I was trained to do it. I didn't even realize how bad it was, but I knew it wasn't great at the time. But you go in and you go to talk to a company, right? And they're going to put in, I don't know, 100 workstations with cabling, right? Data cabling. And they're going to do, you know, one data and one voice, because back then we still did voice cabling. So we had Cat 3 and Cat 5, 5E, 6, 6E. That was a whole other scam. Like, you need to replace your data cabling with better data cabling. We had a new category of cabling to sell you now, right? Forget that, though. You got to put in, you're going to put in one drop to every location for both voice and data. And you go, you know, this is a growth economy and you have more tech growing all the time and you don't really know what you're going to need in the future. So why don't we do two data and one voice to every location? Hey, by the way, a wall plate has easy four jacks that go in a wall plate. It could be six, but I mean, four is a nice round. Why don't we do three data and one voice? You'll be future proofed. You'll be future. And so you could get a client that had the money to say yes. Then think about the data technician who's in there pulling cable, bundling it in the ceiling, bringing it down into a closet, punching it down onto a patch panel on one side, punching it down to jacks on the other side. Is that person's job necessary for the company to succeed? Absolutely. Does the customer buying the infrastructure need data cabling to the workstations to function the way that they have planned? Yes. Do they need three data cables? No, and they never did. And they never did. They absolutely never did. Not necessary. So how much extra work was being done just as filler because somebody somewhere was willing to pay for it because they were getting money from a bucket that they didn't give a fuck about? And that's in a real world, actual physical output necessary thing. Think about how many things people do at work that no one ever looks at or cares about, but they look busy. You lean that out and the whole world starts to change the way that it looks. I will tell you this, if you could leave your job for 3 months cold, come back, and nothing would really be different when you got back, and you could just like start doing your job again, and you know, maybe there'd be like, who are you? You used to work here? Like a new guy wouldn't recognize you, or maybe I thought you were gone, right? And then like the few people that were doing little bits of your work, you kind of took it back, they might feel good. But other than that, nothing would really change. They would not have to hire someone to support, to replace you. I'm not saying they wouldn't. I'm saying they don't have to. If your company goes, we could get rid of James and hire nobody and all the lights would stay on, all the items would get shipped, all the directives would be met, all the key KPIs throughout the company would still go through. We wouldn't be any worse off if we got rid of James. James, you're fucked. Because this is now the new wave. All of these layoffs have been bullshit to correct overbuilding more than any other. Some other factors, that's the number one factor. AI skills right now stand out on a resume. If you are trying to find a new job and you can articulate clearly some of the capabilities you have with AI that relate directly to the position you are applying for, an employer's like, well, that's great. I don't have to fight that battle. I don't have to get this person to adopt this newly mandated AI thing that corporate is sending down the pipe, right? I mean, it matters. I'm going to tell you in 5 years, it may be as meaningless as putting skilled with Excel and PowerPoint on your resume. Like, unless your job is the most entry-level shit there is, that employer, potential employer, is thinking, well, I freaking hope so. You know, you're applying for like some middle management position or some executive position, you know, some regional sales position or something like that. Can, you know, effectively use Microsoft Excel, Access, and PowerPoint. you may never get a phone call because they're like, if you feel the need to fluff your resume up with that, then you're lacking in other places. That's the future of AI. This whole, like, well, that's made by AI, or he used AI for that. Like, does anybody say, well, he only did that with Excel? Well, somebody puts together a really great financial analysis, and it generates a graph, and you look at that graph, and it makes things very, very clear. Does anybody say, no, he only did that because he used Excel? That's what Excel says. No, because you know it's retarded. You know that's a nonsensical thing to say. You know that you can give somebody else Excel, and they're going to produce garbledygook. They're not going to produce this concrete result that is based on real data, that's something that a person can get a high-level interpretation of very complex data points very fast. You're like, wow, that guy did a great job. That's AI. If you treat AI like a genie and you make a wish and whatever pops out, it's going to be whatever the hell it pops out that day. But when you know how to clearly articulate things, why can I make a 1.5-page document, throw it into something like Notebook LM, and say, make me a presentation from the attached document. The presentation should have a feel of industrial meets high tech, and it'll throw out a deck like I used last week, and I can just sit here and I can present from it like that. Why? Because I can write the damn document in the first place. My input is what caused the output. It may have made the visual appeal, the presentation order. It may make some decisions on that. It may find some angles I didn't when I read through it. Wow, that's great. I can now leap off of that. But in the end, because I can put the right input in, I can get a great output. That's all AI is. It's a tool. I give you a set of power tools, pneumatic nail gun, power saw, etc., and I give it to two other people at varying level of skills. You are a master carpenter. You start framing a house. The other guy's a weekend woodworker. He builds a bookshelf, and it's a serviceable, decent bookshelf. The third guy has no idea how any of this shit works. And instead of admitting he doesn't know how it works, he tries to do something with it. He ends up at the freaking ER with a 2x4 nailed to his hand. It's the same tool. The operator is the difference. If you do not grasp that, you do not grasp AI, you do not grasp its capabilities, and you are in for a world of hurt going forward. And I mean it. Again, if you unclog toilets, if you replace spark plugs, right, if you dig wells, all of these things, you have a much longer grace period on this. If you are a knowledge worker, and I don't, if you are a manager that manages people to do all those trades, if you are up at the knowledge level of work, the strategic level of work, this applies to you, which means if you are running around in a truck doing blue collar work, but your goal long term is to get into management, you don't want to like have your back still hurt after a day's work when you're 50. Then you need this too. And it can actually help you accelerate your growth up. That might be a different show. I have a whole chapter in my new book about how you advance rapidly and the secret that's an open secret, but I'm not going to go there today. But get ready to be told AI, this is what comes next. AI failed. I'm going to give it 6 months at the most before the media really starts to pick up on this that we're talking about now. Like, it's there if you know to look for it. But it's not open and out, right? But right now it's just like this company spent a bunch of money on AI and they laid off a bunch of people and they lied. Like that's the whole story. Nobody's like lifting the hood and looking at the shit underneath it yet and seeing, wow, that entire fuel pump just exploded all over the place. And then that set the engine on fire and then the wires burned down to the starter. And then the battery caught on fire and the car's going to explode. Nobody's looking at that yet, right? It's smoking. Ah, it'll be all right. It'll go out. That's where they're at with it, right? They're going to tell you AI failed, though, eventually. The promised layoffs are not coming. It was all a lie. It's just a cycle cycling. AI's not ready for prime time yet. We got the most out of, you know, advisory AI. That was nice. It was fun. But it's not really a big a deal. It's not going to take all the jobs. It can't do what humans do. And then it will. When they tell you to stop worrying about it is when you better really start worrying about it. Because it is continuing to become better over time. Don't ever forget. Don't ever forget. The day you use AI, every single day that you use AI, you are looking at the worst version of it you will ever use. It is very hard for some of you to see the improvements, and there's two reasons for this. One, you didn't use it consistently for the last couple, 3 years. That's one, right? If you didn't use it 3 years ago, you can't possibly comprehend how much better it is than 3 years ago. So that's one reason that people don't realize how impactful that is. The other reason is because people are terrible at looking forward, and they have this idea in their mind of what AI is supposed to be. And what do people think AI is supposed to be, by the way? What do people think AI is supposed to be? What, when you, especially those of you that aren't missing it, the people that are, you're right in line with everything I'm saying today, you may now have to like rewind your brain a little bit to go back and understand what was it like when you first started. What did you expect to get? I'm going to give you some names of what I think people expected to get. HAL 9000 from A Space Odyssey, right? Even though it was malicious, right? Commander Data from Star Trek. Jarvis from Iron Man. See, people had this expectation, like they would just be able to talk to this thing, and they would just be able to do anything, and you could switch to 20 different things at once. And, you know, 1 minute it's figuring out how to make warp factor 9.975 possible, and the next minute it's making a poem. And it can kind of do most of the, well, it can't make warp drive because it's not real, but it can kind of like have that level of flexibility, but not well. It has to be siloed and niched into specific actions. And if you want to have a conversation about choosing a gift for Mother's Day, that needs to be in one chat. And if you want to have a chat about a strategic plan to take to your boss, that needs to be in another chat. And if you want to have a chat about a new compliance document that was just dropped from your HR department, that needs to be in still another chat. And instead, people are trying to use it all spread out in one window, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. But it's going to. It's going to. It's going to get where basically these things that we talk about building today will be built by the AI itself in the background. And when you switch, it'll switch. It'll know where you want to go next. It'll be like starting a new chat. The performance degradation across the time of the chat, it's going to be able to reset itself and then kind of pull in only the context it needs to go for. All that's going to get rectified. It's going to make it more useful. And this is the bigger thing. We're going to start having people enter the workforce that are native users of the technology. A person that was, let's say, 15, and maybe not completely native, right? But like before they got through high school, they started using AI. And then they completed their high school work using AI. They went on to university. They probably got admission into university using AI to help them. Then they completed their university path with AI. AI is a thing in their training. AI is a thing in their schooling. AI, they have now, and you're going to have, instead of like this, there is no AI course that teaches you how to do the things we're talking about. There might be programming courses that would be useful for building AI in college, but there's not like an AI pathway through college that's like, you know, using AI for a degree in finance. You get a degree in finance, but you choose how to use AI. This is going to result in this massive percolator, thousands, millions of minds going through the educational path with AI, coming into the workplace in a surge over 10 years. Young people that know exactly how to do the things I'm talking about inside their niche from thousands of different angles that will eventually unify into a really solid methodology, and the people that are already there that have traditionally anchored themselves in middle management and become blockers to those young people. Like somebody has to retire for that guy to move up, or that guy has to retire. Somebody has to die. Somebody has to be recruited out of a firm, and then maybe somebody can move up, but there was always some better person they wanted to steal from another company. So the upward mobility they promised you was never there, and they sucked them over. These guys are going to be a juggernaut. If you're 30 right now and you're kind of like hitting your stride and you're cooking, and you should be, and you ignore this, that's coming for you, baby. You're the starting running back for an NFL team, but every freaking, you know, senior going to the draft is gunning for your fucking job. And they've got the best trainer, right? They've got everything they need to knock you off, including their youth and a new vantage point of the game. That's what's coming for you. So right when they tell you it was never going to do what we said it was going to do, that's when it's going to do exactly what we were always told it was going to do. that's when that there will be a breakaway moment in the next 12 months with AI capability, a massive breakaway. It won't just be like the recent breakaway where ChatGPT had the most mature and diverse and consistent platform out there. Sorry, Claude users, if you're not coding, ChatGPT is the most diverse, strong AI tool there is, but it sucked at images. And now it's better than Midjourney, and it's better than Gemini's image tool. It's basically the two combined. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about kind of this exponential leap in overall performance, not just speed, across all of the platforms that will happen almost simultaneously. It will come. And it will come again, right after they kind of tell you, you know, maybe it's not going to cure cancer. Here's the thing. I want to end with this today. AI is not going to cure cancer. I don't care what Trump said. It's not going to cure cancer. But it will be reported as though it cured cancer, and most people will believe it because most people have yet to comprehend that it is a tool. You will probably have major advances in cancer treatment and cures made in the next 12 months that will use AI. But you don't go, well, AI cured cancer, just as if somebody did the drug trial and used Excel to crunch the data to figure out which variables were having the most positive results on the treatment. You wouldn't say Excel cured cancer. You would say Dr. So-and-so cured or developed this treatment protocol or whatever, which has exponentially increased, you know, 5-year survival rates in this particular kind of cancer. You would never even mention Excel. They'll mention AI, but it's going to be like that. It's going to be these researchers and teams of researchers applying AI to their critical thinking skills, their analysis, their development, coming up and formulating ideas. It will be the person using the tool that actually comes up with the treatment. And AI will get the credit because they want you to believe. Because what they want is a world managed by AI. So one more time, for those of you that are really mad that I talk about this, that like want me to be a Luddite like you or whatever, that scream, they're going to track us. They're going to track us. While you scream at me that from your phone that's being tracked right now because you have no privacy protocols in place on your freaking boomer ass iPhone. Okay? Yeah. That's the reality. That's the reality. It is going to improve to this level, and if you do not learn to use it, it will use you. And it is going to be very difficult for a person who starts using AI 5 years from today to get there at all, if ever. The only way it will happen is if they have someone teaching them who did it now. Because what's going to happen is compliant people are going to use compliant AI all the way, complying all the way through school and come into workforces, and they're going to say, here's your spun up AI to manage yourself with. And it really is going to be a tool that monitors you down to the keystroke. What you're doing when you're fucking off and rats you out. That's what it's going to be. Or you're going to go in and whip your own shit up. You're going to understand exactly what's being done to you. You're going to stay in charge of the system. You're going to be the thought leader, right? And AI is going to be your thought partner. Or AI is going to be the thought leader and you're going to be its bitch. So learn to use it. Not because it's all, you know, sunshine, roses, and puppies. Because it's not. And it will either be your greatest tool for personal agency, or it will be the thing that strips the last bit of personal agency you have from you. It is that powerful, and I don't know any other way to explain it to you. And I'll say this is a lot like Bitcoin. A lot of you, if we go back to like 2012, all you wanted me to do was not talk about it anymore. It's stupid. It's tulip mania. It's dead again for the 800th time. And all you did was talk yourself out of the best asymmetric investment of the last 20 years. Might be the best asymmetric investment of the last century. Honestly. Tell me a better one. Tell me a better one that was as accessible to as many people for so long. I don't know of one. You could tell me, you know, Amazon went up 2,700% or whatever, like, yeah, when? How long was that window? Who knew about it? Were there thousands of people shouting from the treetops, buy this thing? No. And the window wasn't very broad. The window for Bitcoin was open for 10 years before it even really exploded. people had become billionaires and the window was still wide open. The window's still open. It's just not wide open anymore. It's not as easy anymore. It'll take more time now than it did over the last 10 years. So ignore me if you want to. It's okay. I won't get upset. Now, I didn't really see any questions come in today, which I'm just going to accept that I didn't. If you have any, I'm going to say that right now you can ask them. We have a pretty good turnout now. Put the word question in all caps. I'm going to start closing up. And if by the time I get closed up, there's some questions, I will answer them. Please stay on topic today. Don't ask me about your aquaponics system or biochar or Rosola or MREs. Not today. This is what we're talking about today. All right, with that, let's go ahead and remind you guys, if you like this show and the work that I do, one of the ways you can help support us is do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day is the Easily Impact Socket Set. I love this toolkit set. It's very affordably priced. It's a 64-piece impact socket set. And I do use it as an impact set at times. What it means when I say impact, for those who don't know, if you have an impact driver, a power tool that actually, like, it's like a drill, but it kind of has this impact. It doesn't just spin. It, like, bam, 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 as it spins, and it drives nuts, bolts, et cetera, screws into place. It's designed to stand up to that sort of use versus just a standard set of sockets and tools that's designed to stand up to your hands using just manual force. Of course, it works for both because it has the drivers as well. It's just one way of kind of upgrading to a better quality tool set from going from your standard to your impact level design tool. This whole set is super affordable. Right now, this 64-piece set is on sale for $57.99, and I'm going to switch over here. This is the T-Spaz effect and something you need to be aware of. It's real. We move product when we mention product. I already put this product out on Telegram, X, Facebook, etc. this morning before I did the show, and look at that on the page, right? Three left in stock. If you want one, order soon. Now, I want to say something. Sometimes it says shit like that, and the next day there's plenty of them in stock. And sometimes they're not, right? So, and sometimes that's based on what market you're in. Maybe they're not willing to send me one from Washington State or something like that. So your mileage may vary with how many are left. But this morning, there was no stock warning on that. I put it out. Now there's a stock warning on it. So let that speak for itself. Anyway, but if you want and you go there and it's sold out, check the Easily brand for their other hand tools. This is one of those gems in the rough, right? This is one of these higher quality tool manufacturers that make really great high quality tools without like the Nipex or Snap-on or whatever price. That's what you're looking at here. Is it as good as those super top brands? No. Is it way better than like, you know, Cobalt or something like that, like, or Harbor Freight or whatever? Way better. Way better. Absolutely. It's just a much better set of standards that they seem to be building to. When I got these, I was impressed with everything about them. I've had them now for about 2 years. And the reason I have this set is I want a set of sockets in every vehicle I own. So that means I'm not going out and spending $300 for a socket set that's going to live behind the seat of my truck or in the trunk storage area of my Challenger. I'm just not going to put that kind of money into like a set of tools that's designed to stay with a vehicle or with a boat or something like that. Or if I was buying a set that was mainly for use inside the house, like for putting furniture together and stuff, I don't need freaking Snap-on for that, okay? I just don't. And so I might have better tools like in my tool chest out of my shop, but for this type of use or for most people, for all use, this is more than good enough. If you are not a mechanic that works on cars every day, you don't need to go to that super high-end equipment. What you need is super high quality and good value. The price-to-value ratio is solid here. With that, I have not seen any questions come in, so I will say thank you for tuning in today. I really want you to take this thing seriously. I want you to keep an eye on Jack's Laws, too, right now. We are aggressively building out the new website that we'll be rolling out, I don't know when, but soon. I have two books coming out in the next month to month and a half. One is going to be the second edition of Laws of Life which is now Laws of Life Book 1, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. It is going to have about 25,000 new words of copy in it, a lot of new material. And when it goes up on that website, it's going to have a lot of supporting resources to go along with it. Soon after that book comes out, the next thing that's going to come out is going to be Laws of Life Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. That's going to expand on that. It's 16 additional of my laws of life. And it's going to allow you to take that to the next level. That will also go on the new Jocks Laws website with a whole bunch of supporting material, exactly what I don't want to say yet. Then me, myself, and AI will be coming to that by fall. We're going to be rolling out some new AI courses and some new lifestyle design courses. A course for each of the Laws of Life books is coming that have very little to do with AI, and some very AI intensive courses will be coming as well. So, you should, if you are not yet on our distribution list, you should go by, jackslaws.com and get on our distribution list there, and stay tuned to it. And I will give you more information about the launch dates of the book, hopefully this week. I kind of did this out of order, unfortunately. I had my formatter, get everything done, and I'm going to have the last of the last of the last from him by tomorrow, he says, for Laws of Life Book 2. I'm going to put that up. I'm going to set that launch date out. Then he has to do the work for me on Laws of Life 1. That's been edited. It's all ready to go. He just needs the form, and it should be quick. And so I'm going to soft launch the second edition. Then I'm going to tell you about it. Or at least I'll have the date set before I tell you what the date is going to be anyway. And that's why I've not been aggressively pushing the book for the past 3 or 4 months, because I knew the second edition was coming. If you have the first edition, you're wondering if it's going to be worth getting the second edition, it's a strong yes. I wouldn't have done it if that wasn't true. I put a lot of work into it. What came out of the effort that went into Laws of Life 2 was so good it made me make a second edition of the first book, and to go beyond just fixing some of the technical problems that it had. Anyway, with that, I hope you guys had a good show, and I hope you enjoyed it. And I thank you for tuning in, and I will catch you tomorrow with another Just Jack show. We are on regularly scheduled programming for this week. And then it's not next week. The week after, you're going to be getting rewinds and stuff like that, because I am going to Colorado and spending about a little more than a week up there and taking a true family vacation. My wife and I always go on vacation together, but this time we are bringing the whole fam. We rented a huge Airbnb. We basically give them one floor. We take the other floor of it. And so I'm going to have my two grandchildren, my daughter-in-law, and my son with me for a little over a week in wonderful, beautiful Estes Park, Colorado. So you will be getting some rewinds and things like that during that week. But then I'll be back, and we'll just keep charging through the rest of the year. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.